Blog Talk Radio.
Show, guys. I didn't try to do it, but yes, today did in fact begin with some pre-show waffles straight out the hood, 2 days in a row. Holla at your boy. It's what we do here, man. We eat pre-show waffles, then we talk about politics. It's an American pastime. I just made it up right now, but it's an American pastime nonetheless. Very excited for today's show. Hope you are too. Got some jam-packed stuff. All stories that will, I don't know, man, emotional roller coaster. That's how we do it, take you on an emotional roller coaster. So first and foremost, stumbled across a story today on Crooks and Liars about another, just a brazen example of corruption. Again, they're not even trying to hide it anymore. They're just like, okay, let's fucking drop like the little song and dance routine we do in order to be corrupt. Let's just, you know, do straight-up bribery and call it a day. So that's what the politicians are doing now. We'll talk about that. In fact, I'll kick off the show with that in a second. Situation in Iraq is deteriorating. Jihadists are becoming more and more powerful. Give you the details of that. That's fascinating. Of course, the big story last night, we'll talk about it today. Representative Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, dunzo, ousted in a primary. That never happens. It doesn't ever happen that the House Majority Leader gets ousted in a primary. So we'll talk about that. I'll give you a whole bunch of details. People are all over the fucking map, man. Like, everybody's trying to give their take on why they think he lost the election. And most people are just making shit up. It's amazing. It, like, if you follow politics for as long as I have, then, like, you obviously you can read these different articles and realize which ones are actually based on evidence and statistics and stuff, and which ones are based on, like, people just fucking giving their opinion and then rationalizing it. Like, six articles today, in a lot of respected places, by the way, I might add. People are just like, yeah, he lost because of this, and they just fucking insert whatever the fuck they want to put in there. Also, we have, oh my God, like, we're really living up to the name of the show today, Secular Talk, because probably about half of the stories that we're doing involve religion in one way or another. Just some amazing stuff. We have a well-known anti-gay fundamentalist testifies before Congress, and he just fucking gets his lunch eaten. He gets schooled, like nonchalantly schooled by a politician. We have Glenn Beck is going to talk out of his anus. No surprise. Alan West, you want to talk about a sellout, man. Alan West is going to pull the biggest sellout move you've ever seen in your life. He's going to blame liberals for, you know, I don't even want to say it. I don't want to spoil it. We got Louis Gohmert in today's show. We got Creation Today. Did you know that there's actually a YouTube channel that is, like, based on creationism? Like, every video is about creationism. How do you do that? How do you do a YouTube channel and that's, like, your main thing? Like, what do you say? Every day you go out there, hey, beautiful day out today, huh? Yeah, it sure is. Creationism is true, huh? Yeah, I guess it is. Like, what's the fucking conversation like? It's just ridiculous. But we got a clip from there. Really scary stuff. And later on, we didn't get to this yesterday, but a new marijuana product that piqued my interest, fascinated by, since we have, like, a pseudo-legal marijuana trade in the U.S. now. People are getting really fucking creative, and they're coming up with some awesome stuff. So we should all be excited for, you know, the future of all these marijuana products. All right, let's get started, and I want to do that with, like I said, these a political corruption story that's really in your face. I stumbled across this story today. It's on Crooks and Liars. It's about the now infamous kissing congressman, that's how he's referred to through a lot of the media. He's the Republican that brought the Duck Dynasty guy to the State of the Union address. Shows you how serious of a person we're dealing with here. And he also ran on Christian values and then got caught making out with someone who wasn't his wife on camera, as these usual family values Republicans do. It's amazing. In fact, we actually should probably give him credit, because usually the family values people are vehemently anti-gay, and then they get caught blowing somebody. At least he wasn't blowing somebody. At least it was, you know, he was having an affair with somebody of the opposite sex. So he's only a hypocrite in one way and not two. Well, last Thursday, he did an interview, and he probably didn't even realize what he was saying, but he admitted that politics in America is run on legal bribes. This is fascinating. Again, from Crooks and Liars, they say, quote, McAllister, that's his name, said he voted no on legislation related to the Bureau of Land Management. He said a colleague on the House floor told him that he would receive a $1,200 contribution from the Heritage Foundation if he voted against the bill. Quote, I played dumb. How would you vote? McAllister said. He told me, vote no and you will get a $1,200 check from the Heritage Foundation. If you vote yes, you will get a $1,000 check from some environmental impact group. So here we have our elected representatives just casually admitting to the press. Again, he probably didn't even realize what he did. Okay? Just casually admitting, oh, yeah, what do you mean? That's exactly what happens. You go to Congress, and then people tell you, if you vote this way, you get a check from us. If you vote that way, you get a check from them. And, of course, what always happens, usually the conservative ideas have more money behind them. Every once in a while, there's, you know, some progressive idea that's more popular and has more money behind it than a conservative idea. For example, gay marriage. Now, the gay lobby is actually has more money than the Christian conservative lobby. So we're starting to see wins in that respect. But when it comes to everything involving the economy, everything involving domestic policy, it's the conservatives that are more well-funded, because what do rich people want to do? Inevitably, they want to cut their own taxes and give themselves more power. So they buy Congress, and this is the example right here. The Heritage Foundation is a right-wing think tank. So the way that this con game works is you have the biggest corporations in the country and the biggest right-wing donors in the country. They give money to the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation gives money to the politicians, and then the politicians vote how the Heritage Foundation wants them to vote. And remember, the Heritage Foundation, they're only saying to do what the rich donors told them to do. So basically what we have in the United States of America is a system where all of our representatives are for sale. So it doesn't matter what the democratic opinion is of the people. Just to give one example, and this to me is the most overwhelming example, remember back when we had the gun debate after Newtown, and 91% of the American people, according to a poll done directly after that happened, said, let's do universal background checks and really crack down on, you know, felons from getting guns or suspected terrorists or people that have paranoid schizophrenia or whatever it is, right? 91% were in favor of doing a universal background check. Not only did we not get a universal background check, we didn't get a watered-down background check. We couldn't get anything passed. Now, why is that? Because the NRA gave money to the Republicans to block it. Okay, and then guess who gave money to the NRA? The gun manufacturers. And the gun manufacturers have a financial incentive to say, don't pass any gun legislation because it will cut into our profits. So think about it. The people in the country who should least affect the policy, that would be the gun manufacturers. They have the biggest conflict of interest. They should be the last people to set the policy. Okay, they decided the policy. It's an amazing story. We see it time and time again. How about with Wall Street? How about after the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession in 2008? What happened? You know who wrote the Dodd-Frank, who really poked a lot of holes and made all the loopholes in that legislation? The fucking bankers themselves. The lobbyists themselves oftentimes write the legislation that then is supposed to regulate them. But of course it doesn't regulate them. It gives them these loopholes that they exploit. So we have the fox guarding the hen house in the United States of America. There's no actual democratic opinion. There's no democracy. You know, there's no implementation of what the will of the people is. That doesn't exist. What we have is dueling donors determining who can buy Congress better. You know, whoever can offer them the most money wins. And this is a great example of somebody who's actually in Congress telling us, yes, that's how it works. Again, the amazing thing to me is that it's gotten to the point where they've gotten to a point where they're so used to this corruption and this system of open bribery that they've even dropped the facade. Like, it used to be understood right after Buckley versus Valeo in the late 1970s when the Supreme Court ruled that money equals free speech, so they ruled that, okay, well, these politicians can accept big-time donations from billionaires and from corporations. But they knew back then, oh, okay, well, we at least need to hide it and at least pretend like, you know, that's not why we're voting the way that we're voting, and they were embarrassed about it. You know, they realized we have to keep it under wraps and put it behind closed doors and talk about it in a smoke-filled back room because they realize the perception of what they're doing. Now we have dumbass congressmen going to the press and saying, oh, this is how it works. They pay us and then we do it. And they don't even think anything's wrong with it. It's like, no, that's how it is, right? Isn't that just how it is? And by the way, the media is an even worse culprit in this game because their job is to point it out and go, all right, that's fucked up. That should not be allowed. This is a breach of public trust. This is not how a democracy is supposed to work. We've basically become an oligarchy or a kleptocracy or a plutocracy when we act like this. But the media doesn't say that. They don't say that. They play the bullshit partisan game, and they act as if, you know, that's where the real debate is in the country. There is no real debate in the country. There's no real debate. You know, if it was a genuine debate between left-wing ideas and right-wing ideas and they were both representing the people, that's fine. That's beautiful. That's what I live for. I love having those conversations and hashing out those different beliefs. But that's not what we have. We have a debate of dueling donors. So you don't get like 80% of the American people want the minimum wage increase. That's a majority of everybody, independents, Democrats, Republicans, doesn't get done. 91% universal background checks, doesn't get done. 69% never cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. They're considering doing that right now. You know, only 17% want to stay in Afghanistan. Both parties are like, yeah, we'll at least stay there another 2 years. This is the bullshit that we're dealing with, and the media feeds into this narrative that it's like somehow legitimate, that these two political parties are actually having a discussion of ideas, and they're not doing that. They're all selling out. Just the sad thing is, to what degree are they selling out? Or which group of special interests are buying them? That's another interesting part of this discussion that, yes, the Republicans are 100% bought by Wall Street, the gun lobby, you know, and a bunch of other special interests. And the Democrats, they have a less scary group of interests that bought them. You know, the unions, the teachers, lawyers, like, it's not that they're not as scary. They also, unfortunately, take a lot of Wall Street money now, too. But it's just a matter of which special interest group do you want to sell out to? This is why people are turned off to politics, man. They know that see, here's the thing, and I know because my dad was one of these people. They're turned off to the system because they know that the politicians don't give a fuck about the people. They know that they don't care what we say. So they're turned off because they know that they're all fucked up. All the politicians are not doing their job right. But that's where it ends, because your average person doesn't have a degree in political science, and they don't know how to diagnose the problem and fix the problem. Well, guess what? Now we're on to you. It's not just me, and yes, I do have a poli-sci degree, very, very proud to say that, but it's me and a bunch of other people in new media that have correctly diagnosed the problem. And we go, okay, guys, it's not just that they're fucked up and they're not listening to you. Here's why they're not listening to you. They're listening to the donors. Okay, the way you fix the problem is you don't allow them to take money from the donors. And if they do take money from donors, you put them in fucking jail. Okay, the solution is to get the money out of the system. That's how it has to be done. So now I don't think there's an excuse anymore to butt out of the system and to say, ah, whatever, they're all corrupt. No, we can actually fight back. There's a bunch of different ways to do it. Tom Hartman and his group Move to Amend. They're working on amending the Constitution in one way. Of course, Cenk and the Young Turks, they're working on amending the Constitution via the Wolfpack Amendment. There's a bunch of different groups that are working on it, and they're going about it through different legal avenues. Okay, I personally prefer the Wolfpack way because it doesn't depend on Congress itself. It doesn't depend on Washington. It goes on a state-by-state basis. So that's the solution, in my opinion, and we need to keep fighting until we get there. You know, and by the way, not to pick on anybody out there, because I do get this question a lot. I've gotten it at least 5 or 6 times in the last year where people are like, well, what do we do? Like, what do we do? What do we do? We don't get it. What do we do? What are we supposed to do with the system that's corrupt? People say, well, you know, maybe it's time for a revolution or a rebellion or this or that. And I don't think that's possible. You know, the government, they have nuclear weapons and Scud missiles and F-22s and tanks and the military. And we have 2 dudes in Alabama with Ruger 22s and 6-shot revolvers. In other words, we lose. You know, what, do we want to be as silly as those goofy Operation American Spring people who showed up expecting 10 million people in Washington to overthrow the government and 100 people showed up? It's silly. The idea of a revolution is silly in the year 2014. We're not barbarians. And any time we initiate violence, we're automatically wrong. Violence is never the answer. The only time to ever do violence is in, you know, is to respond to an imminent threat of danger against you. Okay, so if you're about to be attacked, then yes, of course, you could use, in self-defense, you could use violence. But it wouldn't be a matter of self-defense if you try to topple the fucking government. No, the idea is to beat the system from within the system and without of the system. So it's a double-edged sword. It's the best way to go after it. So what I mean by that is we should primary all the establishment Democrats and run progressive people. We should vote for the progressive people. And at the same time that we're doing that, that's like the revolution within the system. The revolution from without of the system is a peaceful revolution from without of the system where we try to get that constitutional amendment and we fight until we get it done. All right. Now, let's move on to some serious foreign policy issues here. Let me take a sip of my drink here because I had waffle in my throat. That's literal, by the way, when I was coughing in the middle of that story. Pre-show waffles, bitch. We have an incredibly scary story about a developing situation in Iraq. Jihadists have officially taken over the second largest city in the country. So Fallujah has already fallen. It fell a few months ago. And now they've taken a city named Mosul. It's the second largest city. So the president and the parliament are scrambling to declare a state of emergency and to try and beat back the insurgents. But they've been largely unsuccessful thus far, and there are even reports that they're pretty much absent, that there really is no government counteroffensive, that these jihadists just kind of waltzed in there and took over the city. There's even an oil field nearby that's threatened at the moment, and the backstory of the group that's doing this is even crazier. Now, we've discussed them on the show before, so I got to give you a couple different facts and a little bit of the background information here. The name of the group that's doing this, they're called ISIS. I think it originally stood for I'm going to fuck this up. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Something in Syria and – oh, the Islamic State in Syria. That's what ISIS stands for, the Islamic State in Syria. And they also added the Islamic State in Syria and Levant, or it was the Islamic State in Iraq and Levant. I don't even know what Levant means, by the way. But so the name of the group is ISIS, and this is how insane these people are, okay? Al-Qaeda disavowed them for being too extreme. What happened is they did too many terrorist attacks against Muslim civilians, including women and children, and even Al-Qaeda went, dude, that's fucked up, man. See, we kill civilians, but they're not Muslim. Or we kill civilians, but they're not women and children. You guys are fucked up. So Al-Qaeda disassociated from ISIS, and they kind of broke off on their own. They're this rogue group. And here's the part of the story that I find particularly interesting. They became strong, and this group became a force where? In Syria. And I mean fighting in Syria. Now, remember, the United States, we were on the verge of getting involved in Syria. Remember, Obama wanted us to go there. A lot of Republicans wanted us to go there. but the polls were overwhelmingly against it, and, you know, Russia at the last minute brokered a deal where Assad would give up his chemical weapons, so we didn't engage in a bombing campaign or anything like that. But are you ready for the beyond stupid part? When we were considering invading, it wasn't to ISIS and these insane jihadists that are too extreme for al-Qaeda. It was to fight alongside of ISIS. You're probably thinking, WTF, dog, what's going on here? Well, see, the reality is that Assad, of course, he represents the pro-government forces. He's essentially the dictator in Syria. And look, he's a bad guy. There are reports that, you know, he killed civilians. There are some reports that he, you know, did a chemical weapons attack and killed children. And not a good guy. Not a good guy by any stretch of the imagination. But the rebel movement as well, it's made up of a couple different factions. You have the FSA. They're the Free Syrian Army. They were the largest secular group fighting Assad to essentially try to get their country back. Now, I should be clear that some of the people in the FSA are, you know, Islamic radicals as well. Okay, but a lot of them are secular. And then you have the other groups. You have the Kurds, who I believe are in the north in Syria, and they essentially just kind of want their own state. They kind of want to set up Kurdistan. So they're really largely doing, you know, their own self-defense, and they're really not bothering anybody in any serious way. They're probably one of the best rebel factions that there are. And then you have ISIS and al-Nusra Front. Al-Nusra Front is the official al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria, and ISIS is the group that's too extreme even for al-Qaeda. But if you actually break it down by the numbers, over 50% of the rebels in Syria, they're jihadists. So when we wanted to go in to fight Assad, we were going in to fight alongside jihadists. And then there were all these plans, oh, we're going to arm the rebels. Really, you're going to arm the rebels? Do you think that's a good idea? And then people like John McCain would say, no, but what we want to do is arm the rebels who are secular. Oh, do you? You want to arm the rebels that are secular? That's fascinating. Well, it's not like, you know, the weapons could slip out of their hands and go into the hands of al-Qaeda and al-Nusra Front, which is exactly what would have happened. And by the way, the few weapons we did send there, you know where they actually ended up? On the side of Hezbollah, and they're, of course, a Shiite militant group. All the other ones are Sunni, right? And the Sunnis are on the rebel side. The Shiites are on the pro-government side. So Hezbollah got the weapons, and they're on the side of Assad. So bottom line, we were considering getting involved to fight alongside this group that is basically a jihadist group that took over the second largest city in Iraq right now. So that shows you, that fact alone right there, shows you how fucked up and backwards American foreign policy is. That makes no sense, dude. That makes no sense. And then let's also not forget probably the elephant in the room in the conversation, which is that, look, the new atheists, who I love, right, they're right when they say, well, you can't blame the West for jihad and Islamic radicals because they always existed. Well, yes, of course, they did always exist. There's no doubt about that, just like Christian fundamentalists exist, just like true believers in any ideology actually exist, right? But yes, there is quite a bit of blame to put on America's shoulders because we made the recruitment increase. Why? Because we killed so many civilians in Iraq and Afghanistan and in Pakistan and Yemen and Somalia with the drone war. And when you kill somebody's aunt or uncle or cousin, then they go, well, look, I was moderate before, and I might have even been on the side of America because I don't fucking like the Taliban and these extreme Islamic radicals, but now I might go join the Taliban to pick up some arms to defend the homeland. Okay? So we have made the problem worse, is my point. All the meddling that we did in the Middle East, whether it be in Iraq or Afghanistan or Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, you name it, okay? We broke it. We broke the Middle East, and now we're seeing the consequences. The consequences are as follows. Al-Nusra Front is fighting, al-Qaeda affiliate is fighting in Syria. ISIS, too extreme for al-Qaeda. They're fighting in Syria and fighting in Iraq. Northern Mali has been taken over by jihadists. This wouldn't have happened if we never declared the goofy war on terror. You know, call me crazy. My idea of the U.S. military, here's what you do with them. You protect the homeland. I know, radical idea. You know, you put bases around all the different borders in the U.S., the southern border, the northern border. You put it on the eastern seaboard and the western seaboard. You station the troops there, and you say, okay, guys, do homeland protection. Boom, that's it. You obviously don't deploy them in the streets because we don't have martial law in this country. That's insanity. But the only time the military should be used is to ward off an imminent attack against the nation. If you're using them for more than that, you're doing too much. And look, I understand that there are some arguments to be made that, well, we have a lot of international treaties and we need to defend people. Bullshit. Because every country in the world has international treaties where they're all supposed to defend like 7 other countries, and that's madness. Okay? We can do economic trade with people, we can be allies with people, but I can't ask a young man or woman from Alabama or Hawaii or New York or wherever to go fight and die for a cause that is totally misguided and idiotic. Look, I understand after 9/11 we all wanted to get revenge. You know what you do? You send SEAL Team 6, they put a bullet in the head of Bin Laden, and you call it a day. Okay? Say mission accomplished. But we actually made it worse. We increased the recruitment for Al-Qaeda and the Taliban and all these different extremist groups because we ended up killing so many civilians that they then had an argument. Okay, so when you look at Iraq today and you see that it's broken, of course it's not all the fault of the United States of America, but we do have quite a bit of blame to go around here because of the neoconservative foreign policy that has made the enemies be able to recruit more and actually convince people that they have the answers. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Representative Eric Cantor is ousted, and I'll give you the details of that, as well as some silly responses. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Talk to him and you know it. Don't act like you don't know it. Hard to think, people told me. Keep messing with my head. Should've put some seeds and you may not have flown. You don't have to say that you did. I already know. I found out from him. Now there's just no chance. You and me. You'll never be. Don't it make you sad? Tell me you love me. Why did you leave me all alone? Tell me you need me. Can you call me on the phone? Can you call me on the phone? Girl, I refuse. Just got me confused. Some other guy.
Like my son, baby. The
bridge is so burned. Now it's your turn.
Your turn.
Bonefish Grill, answering your tweets. Kara writes, what's the biggest story of the summer? Brace yourself, Kara. Summer Tales of Lobster at Bonefish Grill. Lobster, lobster, and still more lobster on an all-new lobster-inspired menu. It's a summertime saga of unprecedented indulgence. And no waiting for a sequel. This menu is available every day, all summer long. Yes, Summer Tales of Lobster is a big story, all right. But hurry, this tale is history come fall. Bonefish Grill. Happiness here.
At JSager99 on Twitter, hilarious tweet about ISIS. When you can make a really effective joke, like a good line out of ISIS, you know it's well said, because it's hard to make a joke out of that. But he, I don't have the exact wording in front of me, so I'm going to butcher this. But he said that ISIS is basically the Westboro Baptist Church of terrorism. Because even the other terrorists are like, come on, we told you, no more killing of kids. Is that Middle Eastern accent? No, that was a miserable fail. I turned it into, like, a Mexican dude from Compton. I told you, no more killing kids, ese. just lost half my Mexican audience. No, I love you guys. I just suck at accents. For the record, every time from here on out when I try to do an accent and I fail, just how it is, man. And, like, the funny thing is, when I'm alone, if I'm fucking around and I just say something in an accent, I nail it. Like, I could do a mean Indian accent, a mean Southern I probably do more than any other one, but, like, I can nail some accents when I'm by myself. But then when I get on air, everything comes out as, like, a random Scottish accent or, you know, just totally off base. All right. Let's jump into this Eric Cantor story. This was the big story last night. Representative Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader who was running for re-election in the 7th District of Virginia, is now gonzo, done, ousted. So this is a stunning loss that absolutely nobody saw coming. Even the biggest political junkies were like, no idea. Nobody had any idea. So Cantor was expected to easily win re-election. It would have been his 8th term. He raised about $5.4 million compared with the guy who beat him only raised $200,000. And he's the second most powerful Republican in the House. Cantor's victory seems secure. The main question seemed to be, how big was his margin of victory going to be? Like I said, that didn't work out too well. Get this, no House Majority Leader has lost since 1899. Holy bejesus. 1899, I mean, all of the 1900s and the 2000s didn't happen. So the Daily Caller did a poll last week showing Cantor up by 13 points. At the time that they released that, the Cantor campaign was like, ha ha, stupid, their number's so low, we're way ahead of that. Because their internal polling showed him up by 34 points. All right, now, look, I have to say, man, when I was first reading about this, my initial reaction was, there might be foul play going on here. Because that can't happen. You got to understand something. Polling is very accurate, by and large, especially if you have a whole bunch of polling companies and the overwhelming majority of the polling companies all point to the same conclusion. Like what happened in 2012 when it was Mitt Romney versus Obama, and of what is it, like 29 polling companies, 27 of them had Obama winning comfortably, and the other ones had Romney winning by like a little bit. So usually polls are spot on. So my initial reaction was, something might have gone on. Because there was a story recently, I forget which state it was, but there was a primary where some candidate and his campaign, they were caught in the ballot counting area at night when the place was shut down. So it's like, oh, okay. okay, you're fucking cheating. I see what's going on here. So could this have happened here? That was my initial thought, but I don't even really think that anymore, and I'll explain why in a second. So the speculation as to why he lost is all over the map. Some are saying, well, look, he's Jewish and his religion did him in. No, because he won fucking seven other times, so it can't be his religion because it would have stopped him beforehand. Others are saying that he supported immigration reform and that did him in. That's what the right wing is saying. They're totally wrong about that because a poll that was done in his district, 72% of people in his district support immigration reform. That's overwhelming, man. That means it's a majority of everybody. Okay, it's not just like, well, the base might have been strongly against it. No, that couldn't have been the main reason to oust him because that number is overwhelming right there. Some are saying he's just simply unlikable. That's definitely true. I don't know if that was the deciding factor, though. And let's talk a little bit about the guy who beat him out, too, because this is weird. So we have a college professor whose campaign manager graduated in 2013. Wow. Okay, so we're a really, really young campaign manager. He set up a course based on Ayn Rand and libertarian economics. So we're dealing with somebody who's not too bright here, to say the least. He wrote a thesis in 1996 that's all over the internet now. I haven't read it yet, but I read an excerpt. I'm not sure if it was from his thesis or another piece that he wrote on Think Progress, where he talks about this is a guy who tried to mesh together Christianity and libertarianism, which is really not possible because here's what Jesus wasn't, a libertarian. Jesus would absolutely have been in favor of taking care of the poor and social safety net programs and giving people health care. He definitely wouldn't have been, yay, capitalism, here's who I love, captains of industry. No, Jesus was not a big fan of rugged individualism, so to speak. So he also said he wants to repeal Obamacare. He wouldn't have raised the debt ceiling, which would have been disastrous for the country. That you have to raise it. You can't not raise it. He said he wouldn't have ended the government shutdown. I'm not even sure I know what that means. So what are you talking about? You just would have kept it shut down, so you're an anarchist? You don't want any government at all? And he also successfully branded Eric Cantor as pro-amnesty. So he made it seem like, oh, yeah, this guy wants to, open border anarchy and let people in and just give them citizenship. But here's the most important part, and here's why I think he won. He said, quote, this was when he announced his campaign, and this tells you something about his message. Now, again, I disagree with him on many policy specifics, but the general idea that he put out there for his campaign was as follows, quote, I am running to fix the economy, restore the constitutional system of checks and balances, and here's the best part, and to end this game of crony capitalism by the ruling class in Washington. So again, everybody's scrambling to figure out why Eric Cantor lost. Well, the answer is right in front of us. People fucking hate the establishment right now, and nobody represents the establishment more than Eric Cantor. And the same thing with John Boehner, by the way. These guys are tried and true Republican establishment people. You know, all they do is represent Wall Street. They don't have any – they have none of that populist fervor that a lot of people in the country are feeling. So when anybody comes along and says, I'm anti-establishment, people go, fuck, I'll vote for you. I'll vote for anybody who's anti-establishment at this point. And I really don't fucking blame them, man. You know, again, I disagree with this guy on a lot of policy specifics, but when you have one candidate who's like, I'm an outsider, I'm going to buck the system, I don't like the crony capitalism, the system is broken, I'm anti-establishment, people are going to go, yes, finally. Well, I mean, there was a point not that long ago when the approval rating of Congress was 9%, single digits. We've talked about this before, but when the British crown ruled over us, the popularity rating was, what, a little over 20%. I mean, it's unbelievable that now Congress is less popular than the fucking British crown was when we were fighting a war against them. That's why he went down. And by the way, remember I said how I'll explain why I don't – I don't suspect foul play anymore. I did originally, but here's the reason why I'm not so sure and I'm leaning towards thinking there wasn't foul play. Because there weren't that many polls done. Because I searched the internet high and low. I went to Gallup, I went to Pew, I went to Real Clear Politics, which really goes in like does all the polls in the country and like puts them all together, right? I really couldn't find any polls other than the ones that were cited in the articles about this, which was the Daily Caller 13-point lead for Cantor and the internal polling, which I don't trust any internal polling, and they said a 34-point lead. So, yeah, they're off, but the Daily Caller is a bullshit fucking website. They probably didn't do a good poll, and internal polling is bullshit, too. So, I mean, I guess it was a crapshoot. Nobody really knew what was going on. But either way, these are the results, and it's not looking pretty for the establishment. Now, final thing. The Republicans are going to misinterpret this big time, okay? I guarantee you, because the Republicans are going to go, oh, man, this means we need to run to the right and be more like the Tea Party. No, no, that's totally wrong, because what happened in 2012? The Tea Party got their fucking clocks cleaned. Alan West, Joe Walsh, Christine O'Donnell, Sharon Engel, Richard Murdoch, they're all Tea Party people. They would be in Congress. They'd either be in the House or the Senate right now, or, I don't know, one of them was running for governor, I think, Sharon Engel, I think. Governor of Nevada, was it? Whatever. I'm getting into the weeds here, but they would have gotten elected. They would have gotten elected if the idea was the Tea Party is what we want. It's not that the American people want the Tea Party. It's that the American people want anything that's anti-establishment. So they're going to run to the right and fuck shit up for themselves more, which is probably good for the Democratic Party, because they'll run further to the right, and then in the next presidential election, people will yet again be tired of their extremism. All right, now, let's go to some silly responses. Talk radio host Mark Levin went on Sean Hannity's show last night to talk about the ousting of Eric Cantor. And like I was just describing to you guys, it's not that the American people want the Tea Party, okay? And it's not that Republicans necessarily want the Tea Party. It's that they want anything that's anti-establishment. So whatever can fill that void, because we hate the establishment so much, remember, not that long ago, Congress had a 9% approval rating, okay? It's that we hate the establishment so much that if anybody comes along and says, fuck the establishment, we go, okay, I got to vote for you. This guy's got to be better than the other guy. So, Eric Cantor, House Majority Leader, ousted, shocking to everybody, and here comes Mark Levin to give Republicans sage advice.
You look at this election in 2012 of Obama. Obama should have been beaten
by a... Why is that so low? Hold on. Oh, all right, we'll have to deal with it for now. Or... Sorry, just trying to get the volume right for you guys. Who doesn't love being live, bitch? Okay, here we go. Give me a countdown from three, motherfuckers. Actually, make it from five. Actually, make it from one. Okay, here we go.
You look at this election in 2012 of Obama. Obama should have been beaten by a halfway competent presidential candidate in the Republican Party who could articulate the principles of the party and expose Obama's fecklessness and weakness. We didn't do it. Millions of people stayed home. And who are those millions of people? Those were Reagan Democrats. Those are blue-collar Democrats. Stop chasing ethnic groups. Stop chasing genitalia. Talk to the American people. Talk about liberty, opportunity. Explain to them that Obama's wrong and that we need to unleash the American people and unleash the economy.
They're already drawing the exact wrong conclusions based off of Eric Cantor losing. They say, see, you got to go further to the right. That's what we have to do. That's what this election shows. And you can't worry about these ethnic groups. They're unbelievable. They don't even realize in casual conversation they're wildly offensive and douchebaggy. Ethnic groups and chasing genitalia. Really? That's how you're going to refer to women? Don't go after ethnic groups, those blacks. The blacks and the Hispanics. And don't chase genitalia. Don't try to get the female vote. Well, gee, I wonder why they're not voting for you and they're not going to vote for you. Because you don't respect them, you don't appreciate them, you don't view minority communities and women as human beings that have beliefs and opinions and policy ideas. You view them as like this nuisance. Like, get off my lawn. Not just the kids, but get off my lawn, colored folk. Get off my lawn, genitalia ladies. What a loser. Now, let me explain to you, using numbers, why he's exactly incorrect. The idea that, well, you just need to get more of the white guys. Okay, well, looking at the data from the 2012 election, Obama got 60% of the young vote, so you already need definitely to get more of the young vote. You need to reach out. Whether or not you think that's the answer is irrelevant. You need to do it in order to win, okay? 93% of the black vote, you're going to have to reach out. 71% of the Hispanic vote, 73% of the Asian vote, and 55% of the female vote. So the Democrats destroyed you in everything but old white men, or actually just, I think, white people in general. So if you don't reach out to ethnic groups and genitalia women demons, then you're done, man. You're donezo. You know, you'll become like the Whigs. The Republicans will become like the Whig Party in the United States. So I should also mention there were 100 articles released within the week of the election. So when Romney lost directly after that, a bunch of articles were out there detailing how Romney actually got a historic percentage of the white male vote. Of the white vote, period, actually. He got more of the white vote than even McCain did. So even the first election where Obama won, he got 59% of white people in the country. Even liberal states, Romney won the white vote. So the idea that you just need to reach out more to white people and white males and forget about the genitalia, vaginas, and ethnic people, colored folk. You just don't get it, Dippity. You just don't get it. But they love you. They want you to vote for them anyway, right? No, us Republicans don't hate black people. We just hate the ethnic folk and genitalia ladies. See, usually where I'm from, when people say you're chasing genitalia, doesn't mean what Mark Levin is talking about. I spend most of my most of the time from when I was 16 and up chasing genitalia. Had a lot of fun chasing genitalia. All right, let's go to. Oh, okay, sorry. Just deciding which to go to next. All right. Here's another example of how Republicans think, this time specifically about the poor. There's a Northwest Indiana Republican named John Johnston who's challenging Democratic State Representative Chuck Mosley for the 10th district seat. And this guy recently did a social media event where he answered some questions that people have. Well, it didn't quite go as planned because, as we've learned over time, when a lot of these politicians are off script, they tell you what they're really thinking, and it just happens to be absolutely idiotic and pathetic. So he was asked a question about the poor, and he said this, quote, "For almost three generations, people in some cases have been given handouts. They've been enabled so much that their paradigm in life is simply being given the stuff of life, however meager. What you see as a setting for a life of misery is life to them nevertheless. No one has the guts to just let them wither and die. No one who wants votes is willing to call a spade a spade." Whoa. How exactly are you calling a spade a spade? See, this is what a Republican views or a far-right conservative views as keeping it real. I'm going to keep it real with the folks and the voters. And what I mean by that is I want poor people to wither and die. Do you really? I hate to spoil it for you, buddy, but that's not a majority position. But okay, we will check you down for wants poor to wither and die. See, this is the policy debate that we're supposed to have with these people. People always, you know, on the right always get mad at me because I'm dismissive of a lot of their ideas. This is why I am. Because this isn't like just one dude, okay? Like, fringe kook. Yeah, he is a fringe kook, but the fringe kook has become the majority in your party, okay? The overwhelming majority of the American people go, whoa, what the fuck is wrong with you? You want poor people to wither and die? You'd rather them die than give them a social safety net program, give them a little bit of health care, or $1.30 per meal to eat, okay? This is what we're dealing with. This is why I'm dismissive. Because this isn't a debate of ideas. This isn't a policy back and forth. We're not having an intellectual discussion about how to best tackle the problem of poverty. One side is like, me likes tacos, and me want to run for office and club people overhead. And the Democrats and the progressives are sitting there going, this guy serious? This is who we're supposed to debate with? You're not a serious person if that's your belief system. Okay, you're just not a serious person. And by the way, as we've gone over time and time again when it comes to the issue of poverty, the idea that it is solely an individual issue, that it's solely like, hey, get your shit together, you know, get your shit together, it's all on you. That is a ridiculous idea because as we've discussed over and over, even if you work a full-time job in the United States of America at minimum wage, you still don't make enough money to survive. We have over 10 million people in the country that are members of the working poor class. Should all those people just wither and die? If somebody's unemployed because their company is making layoffs, so through no fault of their own, because of the ebb and flow of the economy and systemic issues, they get laid off, you'd rather them wither and die? Or how about the fact that 76% of the American people live paycheck to paycheck? Okay, so again, if there's furloughs or if they get laid off temporarily, what happens? You want them to wither and die. The idea that if you don't make a lot of money, that something's wrong with you, you're defective, and it's an individual failing, that doesn't match up with the facts of reality. Okay? I mean, look, what's the unemployment rate right now? 6.3% or something like that in the country? So the overwhelming majority of people are working, no matter which unemployment number you use, the real one, as they call it, or the one that's lower, the 6.3 number. I mean, what percentage of the people who are out of work are not looking for work and really want that handout, really want to lay down and, on a beach and just say, fuck it, I don't want to work the rest of my life? I mean, 1% maximum, okay? And by the way, I'm not just pulling that number out of my ass. If you look at the fraud rate in the different social safety net programs, specifically there was a USDA study that looked into the food stamp program to see how much fraud, waste, and abuse is in there. 1%. So 1% is gaming the system. Everybody else is legitimately using it in a time of need, and then eventually they'll get off of it. And by the way, all these programs, or most of them, have a sunset clause. So you have to get off of them at a certain time. There's rules that go along with taking money from these programs, including looking for work and doing all that stuff. So the idea that, if you're poor, you're just a bad person, you know, you just have this moral failing, you don't want to work, a ridiculous idea. I mean, there was another study last week that showed that the longer you're unemployed, the higher the rate is of depression. More people who are long-term unemployed are depressed. So what's your argument? People want to be depressed? They want to be long-term unemployed? They want to feel down on themselves and feel like they don't have a purpose? No, again, the overwhelming majority of people, about 99% of people, they all want to have a purpose in life. They all want to be successful, make some money, take care of their family, and all that stuff. But your absurd idea that's been drilled into your head by Fox News and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh, the idea that they're just bad people and they should wither and die, okay? That's not a majority position, and you make yourself look like the clown that you are when you admit to stuff like that. And the final thing I'll say here, he tried to make it better. He came out and semi-apologized. This is his apology. Quote, I saw the opportunity to say something. I think a lot of the poor have no way out, and there's no motivation to improve your position. It's like training a child. Either you enable them or force them out at some point. So, no, the poor shouldn't wither and die. They should live, but we need to admit that they're all like children. Everybody who's poor, they're like children. Well, son, Thank you for calling millions of Americans who are just trying to make a better life for themselves. Children, the massive irony of this all is that your belief system, because it's so juvenile, makes you like a child, because you clearly haven't bothered to read about these serious issues or do any serious thinking about it, and you're just spewing these innate visceral feelings that you have. That's a lot more like a child. That's a lot more like a toddler than anything any poor person is doing. Let's take a break. When we come back, sweet baby Jesus, we're going to get into a whole bunch of religious stuff, including anti-LGBT bigotry. We'll get into Glenn Beck has another genius political prediction for us. We'll get into Alan West and the KKK and, oh, my God, Creation Today, the channel. I'm telling you, if you enjoyed the first hour, doesn't matter. Fuck the first hour. Second hour is where it's at. It's going to be better than the first hour. That's my sincere prediction. I like the stories in the second hour more. Stay right there, people. Peace.
Fall in love with me. Congress, Taco Bell is attacking our breakfast values with their AM crunch wraps, waffle tacos, and Cinnabon Delight.
Hash browns on the inside?
Waffle shells? This is not the breakfast our forefathers ate. I am concerned Taco Bell breakfast will lead to anarchy.
The next generation of breakfast is here. Introducing the Waffle Taco, AM Crunch Wrap, and Cinnabon Delight. It's part of the all-new breakfast menu at Taco Bell. Wake up, live more. At participating locations, Cinnabon and Cinnabon Delights are trademarks of Cinnabon, Inc.
There's a reason Audi is considered a luxury automobile brand. Progress is the driving force behind everything we do. And there's a reason Classic Audi in Eastchester is a classic Audi dealer. As a family-owned and operated business, your satisfaction is our top priority. At Classic Audi in Eastchester, we've exceeded your expectations for over 30 years. After all, you don't become a classic overnight. Classic Audi. On White Plains Road in Eastchester and at WestchesterAudi.com.
Lot of stuff, lot of stuff about religion, lot of stuff. Bligga, 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 bligga. Know what I'm saying? Alright, yeah, I want to do the Glenn Beck story before I do the anti-gay back and forth. Glenn Beck has another genius political prediction for us, so listen to him describe what he thinks is going to happen with immigration reform and the border.
What are they doing to our border? They are making camps. I'm warning you right now, mark my words, if it lasts 5 years, if it lasts 5 to 10 years, you will hear... They'll say exactly the same thing. You know what? We should just give them their own state. We should just Arizona. What do we do? Look at all that land. Just give them Arizona. We took it from them in the first place. That's land that we stole from Mexico. You mark my words, it's coming. They are making a Palestinian plea, and you're watching the beginnings of it right now. Mark my words. That's going to go all over today, and everybody's going to call me crazy. Whatever.
That's right. That's right. We are going to call you crazy, and we're not wrong for calling you crazy. You're framing it as if we are the silly ones for calling you out on your nonsense. No, no, that is nonsense. You just absolutely made that up. Do you understand what he's saying? He said, mark my words. Done. We just mark your words. Okay? In 5 to 10 years, the United States, the government, the Democrats, will give Arizona to Mexico. It's hard to be that stupid a person. It really is. It's almost like Glenn Beck wakes up in the morning and says to himself, what ridiculous shit can I say today that nobody will believe and I'm wrong about? How can I say the most absurd thing? I want to out-stupid other stupid conservative pundits. Look, there's no accountability. This is what I always say about the right-wingers. That's why from now on we are going to actually keep track of this stuff. Because I can give you so many examples. So when Pat Robertson predicted, he said, God spoke to me and said Mitt Romney is going to win in a landslide. Okay? That didn't happen. So God didn't speak to you. You know what should have happened the day Obama won? Every viewer of Pat Robertson should have immediately stopped watching him. Or if not that, all of the stations that play his show, ABC Family, they all should have stopped covering his show. Because they go, oh, okay, you're a con man. You're a scam artist. Either that or you're a seriously stupid guy, because that didn't happen. You were wrong. How about Larry Kudlow on CNBC? This guy also predicted a Mitt Romney landslide victory. What happened, dude? The day after Obama won in a landslide, you should have been fired. Your job is as a political and economic analyst. You're bad at your job. You're bad at your job. Rush Limbaugh, same thing, predicted a Mitt Romney landslide. George Will, same thing, predicted a Mitt Romney landslide. There's no accountability for right-wingers. How can you predict a Mitt Romney landslide and then expect us to still take your prediction seriously? You're horrible at this. Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Dick Cheney, all these guys, oh, Iraq, we're going to be in and out of there in a few months. The oil will pay for the war. We'll be greeted as liberators. All these neoconservative lies, okay, or horrible predictions, whatever they were. Either way, they're wrong. And now these same assholes come along and they want to talk to us about foreign policy. They want to say, oh, no, this is what's going to happen if we act, if we do this policy or that policy. Sit this one out, Nostradamus. You're wrong, okay? You've never been right. You don't know what you're talking about. You're like a child. We might as well throw darts at a board with different policy ideas on it, and whatever it hits, that is just as likely a chance to be right as you are. Fucking use the magic 8-ball. You probably have a better chance. You like how my magic 8-ball move looks like I'm jerking off a giant? Only on Secular Talk. Serious policy discussion and jerking off giants. That's what we do. But it really is so sad, man. He should be embarrassed. The guy should be embarrassed. He's such a fraud. Everything about Glenn Beck is totally, his delivery, his bravado, his over-the-top drama queen attitude. The guy doesn't know anything about policy substance. He knows nothing about policy substance. The dude just said that the government is going to give Arizona to Mexico. Really? Really? If you believe that, you're just as stupid as he is, just for the record. Okay? And again, I'm tired of playing this game and going back and forth, but some right-wingers are ignorant and others are stupid, okay? And ignorant is more excusable because we could educate you. You have the potential to learn. But if you're somebody who can hear what Glenn Beck said there and you're nodding along in agreement, you're not just ignorant. You're a dunce. You're a blockhead, okay? Your IQ is not high. You're following people who – it's the blind leading the blind. You're following a dude who doesn't know anything about anything. Okay? It's so sad. This guy's got a TV channel. By the way, I can't wait until the blaze is off the air. And it's coming soon. It's coming soon. Believe you me, I've seen the numbers. I've seen the internal numbers. He's working on a subsidy from the right-wing think tanks. That's going to run out, and they're probably not going to re-up his contract because his ratings suck, and he's not delivering. Okay? Tick-tock. Glenn Beck's career, going bye-bye, especially because he says stuff like that. We're going to give away Arizona. What's going to happen to the Phoenix Suns? What happens to them? Curious, Glenn. What's your theory on that, man? Well, the Phoenix Suns are going to move to Tijuana and become the Tijuana Suns. Ah, that's nice. Beautiful. You got it, buddy. Okay. Now we'll get into the religious stuff. The extremist Christian fundamentalist Matt Staver was testifying before a House committee about LGBT equality laws. Naturally, he's against them. And Representative Gerald Nadler is going to grill him and deconstruct his argument perfectly to the point where I don't even think Staver realizes it, but at the end, he admits that he's wrong. So this is fascinating. So here it is, and the argument is about if rejecting gay people from a business because they're gay is protected by religious freedom.
The gay marriage, is that correct?
Correct.
Would it be an equal limitation, his religious belief, if he said, I don't want to go to a wedding of black people? I want to discriminate against black people. Would that be would the government saying you can't do that be a violation of his religious freedom?
I think that's fundamentally different.
Why?
She's not saying she doesn't want to photograph a wedding where there's people who are gay and lesbian. She's saying she doesn't want to photograph a celebration of same-sex unions.
Well, and if her religious belief said, I don't want to celebrate a celebration of black unions because I think black people shouldn't get married. That's my religion. Should government, I mean, is it an imposition on her religious freedom for government to say you can't do that?
I think it's fundamentally different, and I don't think that's what the issue is in that case. And
that's
I don't
exactly what the issue is.
No,
she has a religious belief that she shouldn't participate or be forced to participate in a celebration which goes against her religious belief. And let's assume or her religious belief that she shouldn't photograph a Jewish wedding. Would that be discrimination that the civil rights law can proscribe or not? And if not, why not?
I think it would be something that she wouldn't object to, first of all. Secondly,
somebody with some religious belief might object. I'm not saying that your client or your friend or whoever she is, let's assume that someone had such a religious belief, that it's a violation of her religious belief to be forced professionally, because she's a photographer, to photograph a Jewish wedding or a Muslim wedding or whatever. And the government says that's discrimination, you can't do that. Is the government being improper and by limiting her religious freedom in that case?
Well, first of all, there's a legal question of whether it's a public accommodation, but assuming that it is, she would have an issue there, a violation potentially. But
she
I think what that issue okay. is fundamentally different. She specifically stated in that case that she doesn't discriminate against...
It's my time. I don't see any difference at all. You can try to see it. Now, if the owner of a public accommodation, a restaurant, said, I don't want... Well, I'm holding out myself in commerce. My religious belief is I don't want black people or Jewish people, whoever, or gay people in my restaurant, and certainly not a gay couple holding hands. And the federal government says that is discrimination. Is that a violation of the freedom of religion?
No.
Ah, did you catch it? At the end he goes, no. So we got him. He goes through this whole list of stuff, and then he throws in at the end there. So if somebody's holding hands in a restaurant or something, and, you know, they don't want to serve gay people, is that a violation of religious freedom? No. That's right. That's right, it's not. Now, again, I think that Matt Staver didn't even realize that he was agreeing with the guy at the end. And the clip goes on where apparently they both don't realize that Staver just conceded. But look, man, you can't argue against that. Okay, the idea that religious freedom overrides every other law in society, that's absurd. That's theocratic anarchy. Because then you could do whatever you want and hide behind the idea that it's your religion to do whatever illegal act it is. So, for example, you can have slaves. You know, what's to stop somebody from having slaves in Nebraska, and then when the authorities approach them, they say, whoa, 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 whoa. Hello, the Constitution grants freedom of religion. Have you read the Bible? There are plenty of passages that say not only is slavery right and just and moral, but it's moral for the slave to fully submit to their master, even if it's the most brutal and harsh master imaginable. Okay? That's in the Bible. So if somebody truly believes the Bible, they're a Bible literalist, look, that's part of their religious freedom, right? Hey, I believe the Bible. I'm implementing it. So if you tell me I'm wrong and I can't have a slave, well, you're encroaching upon my religious freedom. Now, here's the thing. We all know that that argument doesn't carry water, and it's ridiculous. And any normal person would go, holy shit, that's a stupid point. I can't believe you're hiding behind religion to justify slavery. But guess what? That's one of the things that happened in the past in the United States of America. People did use that argument. That, look, the Bible's in favor of slavery, and if it's good enough for the Bible, it's good enough for me. If people can say anything. Well, my religious beliefs say we're not going to interracial marry anybody. So is that legal? Is it legal for anybody at a courthouse or at a church to say, well, we don't marry interracial people? Sorry, no interracial marriages. No, that would violate discrimination laws. Or how about I own a store, and if anybody comes into my store and they don't have – and they've ever cut their hair or shaved their face as a man, I'm not going to serve you. Because in the Bible, it's an abomination to shave your face and cut your hair. Now, of course, that store is going to go out of business in roughly 4.5 minutes because mostly everybody today shaves and cuts their hair. But look, that should be protected by religious freedom. According to these guys, it is in the Bible. If you actually believe the Bible, you would act like that. Okay? So the point is, you can't hide behind the idea of religious freedom. Tattoos in the Bible. You know, somebody could say, I'm not going to serve anybody with tattoos because it's my religion. That's in the Bible, you know, not tattoos specifically, but body modifications. Body modifications, body piercings, and all that stuff. So anybody like that, we're not going to serve you. Or how about this? I wonder how Matt Staver would react if it was a Muslim-owned business, and they said, oh, your wife is in here and she's not fucking covered? Get her out of here. Get that bitch out of here. She's, you know, it's my religious freedom to kick you out because your whole body isn't covered as a woman. Are you infringing upon my rights and my religious freedom by telling me that you're going to bring your woman into my store? Get out of here. It's a ridiculous notion, you know. And I could play that game too, by the way. That, you know, I could make up a religion, or join a religion where one of the sacraments is doing drugs. I could say, oh, man, look, I really like to stop smoking weed or whatever drug you want to pick, but I can't because it's a sacrament in my religion. So you can't arrest me for it because you're encroaching upon my religious freedom. Or, look, you know, I'd love to come to work, boss, but my religion says I need to rest half the week. It's one of our sacraments. We have to do it. See, we could all play this game, and we're setting up a theocratic anarchy system if we act like this. So let's not act like this. Just like we tell people that, hey, you can't slaughter goats in your front yard. It's against FDA regulations, and you can spread disease, and we don't care if it's part of your Santeria ceremony. It doesn't matter. You're not allowed to do it. Just like we tell people that, at the same time, we also tell people, hey, dipshit, you can't arbitrarily discriminate, even if it is based on your religion. So you can't tell a woman you're not going to serve her. You can't tell a black person you're not going to serve him or her. And you can't tell a gay person, get out of here simply because you're gay. So, of course, discrimination laws should protect the LGBT community. It's beyond a no-brainer. And look, just final thing. To be clear, I'm not saying that you can't have any laws at all. I'm sorry. I'm not saying that, you know, these private businesses are restricted in every way. It's just that you can't arbitrarily discriminate. So, for example, if somebody comes in to your store and they break something, and then they're acting like a dick to you, are you allowed to kick them out? Yes, of course. It's your business, your property. Of course you could do that. But the thing is, you can't take things that are natural to people, and you can't take things that are, you know, part of their identity, for example. So because of your sexual attraction or your gender or your skin color or your religion, like these are things that you can't just kick somebody out because of that, because those are arbitrary reasons to kick them out. It doesn't mean that when you have a legitimate reason, like, hey, this person's coming in here with no pants and waving his dick at these random customers, yes, kick that guy out. Yes, he can go. Get him out of there. You know? So you have to just be reasonable about this shit. That's what it comes down to. But there are so many assholes in the country that are still set in their ways about how gay people are, like, you know, demonic and inferior, and they're fucking evil, and we should be able to kick them out of our places. Fuck you. All right, let's do this Alan West story. Sandy Rios is a far right-wing Christian and conservative radio host. She had Alan West on her show recently to discuss President Obama and some of his recent decisions. And they decided to take some phone calls. Oh, boy, was that a mistake. So listen to this caller. This guy is going to make one of the most incredibly outrageous claims slash suggestions I've ever heard. And take note of how Alan West and Sandy Rios immediately come back and respond after they cut him off.
I think we've put up with Obama long enough. Ever since he's been in the White House, he has lied. Every word out of his mouth is a lie. So what we should do is get rid of him. And how we should get rid of him was through the Ku Klux Klan. They ought to hang him on the
Richard, I don't want to hear that. I don't, that's, sorry, Colonel West.
No, that's okay. I mean, we don't know if Richard may have been a plant to say that on your radio show, so then media matters, and, you know, we'll record it and say that Sandy Rios and Alan West are promoting the Ku Klux Klan.
You know, that's true.
You know what?
That's true, because he was very vague about his service, wasn't he?
Yeah, this is what they do. They're very smart like that. Look, this is what we have to look at. This is without a doubt is an impeachable offense because the President of the United States of America made a unilateral decision without consult with Congress, which he was supposed to have done by law. So once again, he sees himself above the law.
So a guy calls up, says that KKK should hang Obama from the nearest tree. They cut him off rightly. Okay, good job. You can't do a direct threat on anybody, never mind the president. So credit to Sandy Rios for doing that and then for apologizing to Alan West. And what does Alan West do? Immediately blames liberals. An overtly racist KKK sympathizer says we should hang the president and kill him. And Alan West goes, oh, blame the liberals. For fuck's sake, man, have some decency. A liberal plant? A liberal plant. Okay. They haven't done that. There's no evidence Media Matters has ever done that in any situation ever. No evidence Right Wing Watch or any of the, you know, so-called liberal outlets. They've never done a plant. They've never done a plant. Okay? But he goes, yes, it is a plant. And they're doing it because Media Matters wants to pick up the story and run with it and do this and do that. And then Sandy Rios, after Alan West floats his conspiracy theory that he just pulled out of his asshole, she's like, oh, that's true. That's true. Why? Because he was very vague about his military service. What? What does that even mean? He didn't sound like the most intellectual guy in the world. I doubt he's going to go into detail. Well, I was in the 32nd Airborne Brigade of blah, 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 blah. Me and my friend Ted, we were stationed in wherever. I mean, you have to be kidding me. So with zero evidence at all, they blame an overt racist, bloodthirsty guy who wants to hang and murder the president, blame him immediately on liberals, and then they don't skip a beat, and they go right back to bashing Obama. And Alan West casually was like, oh, this is what they do. They're brilliant in this way. There's never been any evidence that any of these guys, any of these outlets have planted anybody or done something as ridiculous as, oh, yeah, let's hang the president. Yeah, Media Matters is definitely behind that. You know, when something like that happens, man, all sane people want to hear, we want to stop the politicizing stuff, okay, for just a minute. Just stop politicizing shit for a minute and sticking to your talking points and bashing the president no matter what he does, even when he fucking agrees with you, okay? Just stop for a minute and say, okay, pause, hit the pause button, here's the deal, guys. Doesn't matter if you're a conservative or a liberal or a fucking fascist or a communist, okay? If you sympathize with the KKK or you want to kill the president of this country or any country, you're wrong. You're immoral, you're unethical, you're a bad person, and nobody agrees with you, and you should stop it, okay? Stop with the nonsense. That's all it takes. Look, all you need to do is take a little break, say, nobody agrees with that, this is horrendous, any good person should disagree with this, and then you go on to, okay, now let's go on with our disagreements with the president or whatever. But it's gotten to the point where, and this happened with Alex Jones, too, the other day, how immediately after the shooting with the Vegas cops where it was a right-wing terrorist attack, and by the way, that guy was a fan of Alex Jones. What did he do? He immediately came out and played the victim. He said, oh, this is a plot to get me, and Zuckerberg of Facebook and Obama are behind it. It's a plot to get me, and then he said, if this is the way that they could have done the false flag, and he went on to make stuff up further and say it is a false flag. Look, I get it. You're Alex Jones. You're going to do conspiracy theories. But why can't you pause for 1 second and say, guys, no violence. Don't ever do violence. If you listen to this show and you think that even with all the serious stuff we talk about that I'm ever hinting at violence, just don't do it. I don't agree with violence. You shouldn't agree with violence. Don't do it. That's all you need to do. Take a break. Come back to reality. Say, that's wrong. We don't align ourselves with that in any of these situations, but they never do that. They never do that because they're not smart people. You know, Alan West is not smart. Sandy Rios is not smart. Alex Jones is not smart. So they can't come back to earth for 1 second, stop with the stupid politicizing of stuff, okay, and just sticking to their guns no matter what. They have to overlook the absurdities and the grossness on their side and act as if, well, it's whatever, man. That happens sometimes. Sure. Sometimes people call and they say the KKK should lynch Obama. It is what it is. Anyway, it's the liberals' fault. Yes, blame the liberals for everything ever. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Representative Louie Gohmert is going to talk to a pastor about the separation of church and state. We got Creation Today, the YouTube channel. We'll dive into a really interesting story regarding them. Scary, too. Another scary story. And later on, new marijuana product that is very interesting. So stay there. We'll talk about that and much, much more.
At the gym. Thank your thumb for the song that got the party started and for the song coming next. Now playing You Only on Pandora.
Felt so fine, and a dark above my
Time for what undoubtedly all of you guys were waiting for from the beginning of the show. Because guy's just such a brilliant guy here, Louis Gohmert. Representative Louis Gohmert decided to go after a pastor who believes in separation of church and state because it's so outrageous for somebody to believe in separation of church and state. We believe in theocracy, like Iran and Saudi Arabia. So this is a Judiciary Committee hearing. I love how in this supposedly serious setting, he asks the question that he's about to ask. And I don't know how anybody could vote for him after they hear him ask such a silly question.
I'm curious, in your Christian beliefs, do you believe in sharing the good news that will keep people from going to hell, consistent with the Christian beliefs?
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with your construction of what hell is like or why one gets there. But the broader question is, yes, I'm happy to. When I speak to...
Okay, so you don't believe somebody would go to hell if they do not believe Jesus is the way, the truth, the life?
I personally do not believe people go to hell because they don't believe in a specific set of ideas in Christianity.
No. Not a set of ideas. Either you believe as a Christian that Jesus is the way, the truth, the life, or you don't. And there's nothing wrong in our country with that. There's no crime. There's no shame. It should never be a law against those beliefs because God gave us the chance to elect to either believe or disbelieve. And that's what we want to maintain is people's chance to elect yes or no, the chance that we were given. So do you believe?
Congressman, what I believe is not necessarily what I think ought to justify the creation of public policy for everybody, for the 2,000 different religions that exist in this country, the 25 million non-believers.
He's like a child. They're having a conversation in a House Judiciary Committee hearing about hell. Want to have a conversation about Narnia next? Would you like to do that? Again, the dude is like a child. He's like a toddler, you know, talking about the concepts of heaven and hell. Like, this is not something that serious people who are politicians are supposed to be talking about. Especially in such a serious forum. He asks this pastor the question, do you believe in keeping people from going to hell? Well, your question presupposes that there is a hell and that we all believe in hell and that it's a literal thing. But, you know, when I hear stuff like that, it reminds me of the story we did yesterday, the one about Brian Fisher, where I'm just taken aback by the fact that here's a person that appears to have zero doubt that there is an afterlife. They know exactly what the afterlife is like. They know who's going to be involved, Jesus and the Holy Spirit and God and, you know, Saint this and that and Mary and whatever. Like, obviously you don't know, but somehow you've convinced yourself that you do know. It's such a sad thing. And ironically, you know what it made me think of? Socrates. You're probably thinking, what do you mean? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Well, look, one of the main things about Socrates, why he's been a historical figure and why he's been thought of as one of the most brilliant minds until today, is that he was around at a time when people's sense of certitude was even stronger about the world. Like, depending on what society you were in, you believed in the god or the gods, and you believed that everything was set in stone and the world was flat and this and that. And he came along and all he said was, how do you know that? How do you know that? And people would be the worst rationalizations ever. Well, we know that the gods are real because the god of light is There wouldn't be any light without the God of Light. Oh, how fucking brilliant that is. And in fact, Socrates was put to death for corrupting the youth, they said, but also for not believing in the gods. So here's a guy, all he did was come along and ask, how do you know that? He was just going after dogmatism, okay? And because of that, he's known until today. And Louis Gohmert is the exact opposite of a person like Socrates. No, I know. I know there's a hell. I know it's real. I know I'm going there. I know that I'm going to try to save everybody else. I'm going to question this pastor with the assumption that hell is absolutely real and he should be trying to get people into heaven. It's just so childish. And one of my favorite parts, he goes, no, it's not a set of beliefs. It's not a set of ideas. Either you believe in Jesus or you go to hell. Right, Louis? That would be a set of ideas. And silly ones at that. Man, Thomas Jefferson is turning over in his grave at the idea that people can be sitting there, our representatives in Washington, and that's the conversation that they're having. Nothing about tax policy, nothing about health care, nothing about foreign policy and how we should conduct ourselves around the world and what our strategy should be and what kind of international trade we should do for what goods, yada, yada. No, none of that. Hell is real. Do you try to get people out of hell? Answer that question. Unbelievable. All right. Now, can we get more silly than Louis Gohmert? Possibly. Possibly. I'll let you be the judge of that. Creationist Derek Isaacs was on the YouTube channel Creation Today, which is amazing because it's just a YouTube channel where they talk about creationism. Can't imagine that you can release videos consistently, but I guess somehow they do. And he's going to talk about morality and say something here that's very troubling.
One thought I could not get out of my head, and that was, if evolution were true, then how now shall we live? Meaning, if we were a product of evolution, a product of survival of the fittest, if there is no God, and we're just here by random chaotic force, and we're just molecules in motion, if you will, how would that impact our life? And I found out that once I studied it, you know, and I studied Darwin, I studied Dawkins, Hitchens, E.O. Wilson, some of the purveyors of evolutionary thought, and they led me to a very, very dark place because you have to start asking questions. Well, if evolution is true and it's just all about the male male propagating their DNA, well, what in the world is – we had to ask hard questions like, well, is rape wrong?
Oh, my.
Oh, my, indeed. See, what that tells me is that there are some people like Derek Isaacs who are so disconnected from humanity and reality that they actually think, if I thought there wasn't a God, I would possibly rape people and kill people. No, no, no. See, I've already raped and killed everybody that I want to rape and kill. That would be zero people. But, again, it's troubling and scary and creepy that he's saying this because it makes you think, well, he believes if it wasn't for this idea of God holding him back, that he would actually possibly rape people and kill people and do things that we would all view as immoral and unethical. But to go even deeper here, let me actually answer his question, because the question is, if evolution were true, pause, it is, but he says, well, then why is it wrong to rape? If evolution is true, wouldn't it be fine to rape people? Well, no. And I'll give you two reasons why not. Number one, morality also evolved alongside evolution. You know, there were obviously physical differences that came along with evolution and different species that came about, so on and so forth, but also different ideas and different mentalities evolved right alongside the physical evolution. So it's a real tangible thing. It's not something that we all woke up and crafted it on Tuesday before brunch. And why did morality evolve? Because it makes sense for society to function better, and it gives us the best chance to get along and keep the species going and survive. Okay, and as we all know, that's the essence of evolution by natural selection, the idea that we're all trying to continue the species and survive. So we realized, hey, it works out better if I don't take your shit, you don't take my shit, I don't physically violate you, you don't physically violate me, you know, I don't kill you, you don't kill me, because we know that that would throw a wrench into things acting smoothly. We know that it's mutually assured destruction. If we all act like crazy, insane people and chop off heads and start raping everybody, well, then we're basically guaranteeing our own death and the death of the species. So the fact that he hasn't grasped these arguments or really thought about them, or he doesn't find them persuasive, again, that's so troubling. And the second reason is the golden rule. You have to understand something about the golden rule. Oftentimes when you mention that, religious people will go, aha, so it is religion. No, no, the golden rule is not just religious, okay? The roots of the golden rule, it goes back to ancient China with Taoism and Confucianism. It goes back to ancient Babylon, and Greek philosophers talked about it and taught it, you know, and it probably goes back even before then. It probably goes back to a time when we weren't even doing record keeping. And the whole purpose of the golden rule, the whole idea behind the golden rule, is not one of metaphysics and supernatural gobbledygook. No, it actually is a matter of logic. It's a matter of being objective enough to step out of your own little meat box and skin suit and view life through the eyes of others. So you try to look at life through the eyes of others, and you realize, well, wait a second, I know for a fact I don't want somebody to rape me and randomly shove things up my ass. I don't want somebody to steal my stuff or choke me. You know, I don't want somebody to kill my family members, kill me. So, oh, I get it. These other people, well, look, I have eyes, I have arms, I have legs. You know, I look like this. Well, they have arms, legs, yada, yada. They look like that. So it's reasonable to assume that they probably wouldn't want the same thing to happen to them. Okay, so it's a matter of logic when you break it down like that. But what I always found, it just stops me in my tracks. And I don't just have experience with this from listening to people like these creationists. I've also seen it in my own life when I've had like philosophical discussions with people. Some people, this whole explanation that I just gave, it doesn't land. It doesn't land. Like, it doesn't get into their head. And they just brush it aside. They act like, oh, well, that's not enough. Really? That's not enough? That, what I just described, that's not convincing? That doesn't make sense to you? And they feel like they need that, you know, that, like, fatherly figure that can drop the hammer on your ass and say, no, I am God and you are not allowed to do it. But that's not the way the real world is, you know? That's not the reality of it. It's like they need – it's almost like he's admitting that he needs God for comfort, you know? And the final thing I'll say is, putting aside all that other stuff, the moral considerations – even if there wasn't a good reason to abide by the golden rule and to be moral, right? The moral considerations are irrelevant to the reality of evolution, you know? Evolution existing or not existing has nothing to do with that. That could be a separate discussion of, well, why should we treat people good, you know? But they act like, no, because we can't imagine a world without God, there has to be a God. So it all comes back to comfort. It all comes back to, I want to believe it because the opposite, I can't sleep at night, you know, if I were to believe the opposite. Genuinely childish way of thinking, man. That's like saying Charles Manson can't be real because if I thought he was real, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night. That's not convincing to anybody. So this argument, by the same token, shouldn't be convincing to anybody. All right, next. We've often made this comparison before, that the fundamentalist Christians are jealous of Saudi Arabia and Iran because in those places they get to shove their religion down everybody's throat by law. But I never expected any Republican to be stupid enough to just come out and say it and take away all doubt. Well, now we have that as well. So here is State Senator Jason Rappert. He appeared on a conservative radio show where he discussed a judge overturning the state ban on defining marriage between a man and a woman. So let's listen, and then we'll come back and break it down.
So when judges assert the will of the people wholly in this country, they are pulling the rug out from underneath representative democracy. By the way, Saudi Arabia, they don't live under the same kind of law that we do. They live under the law that they see fit to live under there. We have that right here, too. And that's why there's such an injustice here.
Jealous of Saudi Arabia. You don't even need to read between the lines or think about it or, you know, let it marinate or move around your skull a little bit. No, it's just right there for you. He's like, yeah, Saudi Arabia. You know, makes sense there. Doesn't make sense here. We should do what they do. Yeah, Saudi Arabia, where you get stoned to death for being gay and women aren't allowed to drive or show an ankle. That paradise, yeah, we should totally be like that paradise. He is jealous of shoving his religion down other people's throats. You know, that's what he wants to do. By law, force his beliefs on you. He wants to set up some sort of a awkward Christian theocracy. But as always happens in these cases, it's not a matter of actually implementing Christianity or Islam or anything, because it's not possible to actually implement every letter of the law from those holy books. So what does he actually mean? I want to make it as I want it. I want, as law, my interpretation of my religion. There is nothing more ridiculously selfish than that. You know, the idea that, fuck your opinions, we're going to go by what I want. And then also, he contradicts himself like three times in just that little clip, because he says, quote, when judges assert the will of the people wholly in this country, they are pulling the rug out from underneath representative democracy. Wait, what? So by judges asserting the will of the people, that would be democracy if you assert the will of the people, okay? He's pulling the rug out from democracy. No, no. Again, if you assert the will of the people, that is democracy. But you just said by judges asserting the will of the people, that's pulling the rug out from democracy, so that's not democracy. So you apparently don't know what the fuck democracy is, because you just contradicted yourself in one sentence, in your first sentence. And then he said, by the way, Saudi Arabia, they don't live under the same kind of law that we do. They live under the law that they see fit to live under there. Right, so now again, you're back to praising democracy. Which is it? He's slamming democracy and praising democracy at the same time. He says, we have a right here too. We have the right to live as we see fit here. So wait a second. You slammed the judge for doing what the majority wants, and then you're also saying that we should do what the majority wants. So which is it? Either we should do it or we shouldn't do it. You're saying we should do both. That's contradictory. It doesn't make sense. He's all over the place, man. Look, the reality is 59% of the American people want gay marriage. The legislature should act on it. Congress should act on it and legalize it for the entire country. And what happens, as always, with these guys is whenever they think they have the majority on their side, they pretend to love democracy. Oh, my God, we love democracy. It's the best thing ever. Oh, it's so great. But then when the majority are against them, all of a sudden they're like, no, forget that. We don't need democracy. That's wrong. What we need is a Christian system, and we should copy Saudi Arabia and shove it down everybody's throat. It's a confused political rant where he's contradicting himself time and time again, but the bottom line is he's jealous of Saudi Arabia. He's jealous of an overtly religious system. This is why we call these people the Christian Taliban. All right, next. Speaking of the Christian Taliban. Oklahoma State House candidate Scott Esk was debating on Facebook last year, because that's what all serious politicians do. They debate on Facebook. And the issue was the Pope being more accepting of homosexuality. Apparently, somebody on his wall said that, you know, he likes the idea of the Pope being more open to gays. And he responded, Scott Esk responded by saying, well, no, the U.S. should apply law biblically. So we should look to the Bible on issues like this. And, of course, the Bible is against homosexuality. And that should actually come as no surprise to people, because on this guy's website, he says he's, quote, 100% pro-life, 100% traditional family values, and he looks forward to applying biblical principles to Oklahoma law. So crystal clear on what he thinks about this. The commenter said, quote, so just to be clear, you think we should execute homosexuals, presumably by stoning? Esk answered by saying this, quote, I think we would be totally in the right to do it. That goes against some part of libertarianism, I realize, and I'm largely libertarian. I'm going to come back to that in a second. But ignoring, as a nation, things that are worthy of death is very remiss. If men wink at such perversions, God may have no choice than to judge such nations with calamities. Okay. You, dude, are a fucking lunatic. I say it every day, and just like we covered in the last story, these guys would be a better fit if they were living in Saudi Arabia or Iran. They are the American Taliban. They are the Christian Taliban. He just said it would be the right thing to do to stone gay people to death. Okay? You can't make law based on your silly Bible, your own holy book that you believe, because not everybody believes it, and the First Amendment says we can't do that. These are the same people that scream about how they love the Constitution. Oh, Constitution is perfect. It's exactly what we need. That's what we should abide by, except the First Amendment and that part about you can't establish a religion and you need to separate church and state. Forget that, because I want to put my religion into law and kill gay people with stones. These guys are such jokes, man. And also, you're not a libertarian. For whatever reason, one of my biggest pet peeves is when people don't know basic political definitions and they think they do. Like they talk about, well, I'm a libertarian, but let me tell you why we should stone gays to death according to the Bible and we should implement that as law. Every libertarian in the country, when you said that, they rolled their eyes and they said, fuck, shut up. The majority of libertarians are non-religious, and all libertarians, by definition, they have to adhere to the ideology that you could do whatever you want to do as long as you're not hurting anybody else. And that's exactly what gay people do. They're consenting adults who have relationships and have sex with each other. They're not bothering anybody. There's no victim in the situation, so libertarians have to be in favor of gays. If you're not, you're just confused. You don't know what the definitions are. What a joke, what a silly person. These are some of the people we have running for political office in America. There's no excuse for stuff like this. If you're a grown man and you think that's an acceptable position, you've just gone through your life with the lights off, basically. You know, the lights are off in your head. You haven't thought about anything. You're just this selfish ball of freak, you know, acquiring of silly beliefs from your own little culture and your own little clan, and you're all full of vicious hatred and bigotry. All right. Next. I'm not going to have time to finish everything here, but I'm going to try to squeeze in a few more. Pew Research has a new analysis out based on information from the U.S. State Department, the United Nations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and the International Crisis Group. And they looked to answer the question, which countries on earth still have laws against blasphemy and apostasy? So which countries on earth are you not allowed to say a bad word about religion or God? And in which countries are you not allowed to denounce your religion or denounce God? And the findings are absolutely incredible. So 22% of the countries in the world have anti-blasphemy laws. 22%, man. Now, it varies. you know, which places are actually considered as countries. The number is between 188 and 196, depending on how you count it. But either way, we're looking at about 40 countries that still have blasphemy laws. 11% have anti-apostasy laws. Damn, man, that's just so sad. So here's why this is important, because oftentimes people go after Richard Dawkins or Sam Harris or Hitchens when he was alive and all these new atheists, and they say, oh, these guys are arrogant and they're not winning anybody over. They turn people off. And they say, oh, don't do that. You have to be nice, you know. Well, no, if this story tells us anything, the new atheists are right. They have to be arrogant and aggressive, and for lack of a better word, they have to evangelize. Okay, a little irony to use that word, but they have to get their message out and be aggressive and be sharp with it, because they're fighting against this. They're fighting against a world where, what is it? How many countries? I forgot the exact number. But there are a few countries that even put you to death for being an atheist. So when you're fighting against that, when you're fighting against a system, like in the U.S., for example, on many state law books in the South, it's illegal to run for office if you don't believe in God. You know, now those are unconstitutional, and federal law trumps state law, right? But it's still on the books, which shows you a mindset, okay? So we're fighting back against this behemoth that is the irrational movement of religion, which has been the predominant belief for a very long time. So you need to be in people's faces, and you need to kind of elbow your way into the room. You can't be nice about it, because if you are nice about it, they will destroy us. So Dawkins and Hitchens and the rest of them, they're 100% right in their approach to the situation. And when you see numbers like this, it really highlights that, and it shows us we have such a long way to go before we get to the point where we can relax and say, okay, more people are sane and more people are willing to hear out opposing opinions on ideas like religion and God. All right, final story. I don't really have time, but I'll try to squeeze it in. Foria is the name of a new product in California, and basically what it is marijuana lube. That is tremendous. Marijuana lube. Now, they say it won't get men high. Okay, that sucks, but go on. But it will get women high. Now, why does it get women high? Because they put it in a very special nether region, let's say. Quote, the product works specifically for women because of the very sensitive and absorbent membrane of the vagina and entire vulva, inner and outer labia and clitoris included. Okay. I tried to make that sound sexy, but I can't because the word vulva is not sexy. In fact, when I hear the word vulva, I think it's a Pokemon. Shows you what I spent my childhood doing, playing Pokemon. So the only catch here is that you need a doctor's prescription, and it costs $88 for a small bottle. But apparently, according to some people who have used it, it feels tremendous. Now, I unfortunately have never had high on marijuana sex, but it gets rave reviews from everybody, so I'd like to try it. Although marijuana, as I've said many times, isn't my favorite drug because sometimes I get paranoid when I smoke it. But number one, I'd like to try it, just getting high and doing that. But also reading the story made me kind of want to try the lube too. I guess it won't work for me, but if it works for her, I guess everybody's having fun. So this is what happens, man. The more you legalize marijuana and decriminalize it and change the mindset about it, the more we get awesome products like this. And I expect to see a lot more innovative products as time goes by. All right, I'm dead out of time, but I love you guys to death, and we'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Peace.